presented here for your consideration the notion that the ordinary people surrounding you every day, on the street, the bus, at the post office, or the trendy evening venue, are, in fact, far from ordinary. That these men, women, and others form their own splinter groups behind closed doors, and that these micro-societies engage in activities often more obscure than fiction. Welcome to the Subculture.
Yes, welcome to the Subculture podcast. I'm your host and deprogrammed former member of the girl group The Sugar Babes, Andrew, here with my very good friend.
And I'm Joe, current covert narcissist.
Current covert narcissist. Current, former, future.
Oh, sorry, did I say current? I meant former. You'd totally get better from that kind of thing, by the way.
It's not former, and I've known it for a while.
What are we talking about today, Andrew?
Today, we are struggling to even say it. Today, we're covering a topic that both of us cringed when we wrote it down, then laughed and cried and went through the same sort of emotional spectrum as we've been doing our research, I suspect. We are talking about furries.
It's the big one. It's the mother load.
Please don't say load. Furry. F-U-R-R-Y. What is a furry?
I mean, this has got to be the undisputed king of subcultures, right? Or at least internet subcultures.
Yeah, and I would say it's actually more in popular culture or swirled around the palette of popular culture for a while now, more than some of the other stuff that we would have covered, I think. I mean, I remember seeing it mentioned even on like the fictional TV show in the early 2000s, CSI. Do you remember watching that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think that did quite a lot of damage, actually, that particular episode. That's come up in my research.
So, yeah, to a lesser or greater extent, furries are in the popular culture. But if we can jump into our preconceptions in a sec, but maybe just worth saying, what is a furry before we start, you know, throwing all the lingo at you, all the extreme jargon that we've found.
So, is there a particular definition that you found, or is the one that we should create?
If I bring up, because I thought the description was quite okay, putting it into Google and getting the second result, actually the first one, not so great. A furry is someone who is interested in or is part of the furry fandom, which is a subculture focused on anthropomorphic animal characters. So that's animals with human-like qualities, such as the ability to speak, walk on two legs, wear clothes, etc., etc. They will often create furry personas or fursonas of an animal that they feel represents them, and that kind of serves as their avatar in the community and maybe also in real life, because often we find that these people are making very large, elaborate costumes. Top level description, how does that fit with what you found?
I think that covers it, because it's not just, you don't have to have a fursuit to be a furry. I think you can identify as a furry, as you said, just by enjoying furry art or just anthropomorphized art. I think that's probably about the entry level furry interest, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And preconception wise, when we're laughing and chuckling at this already, because we have some impression of what we're going to find when we start looking. So what did you think when you started looking at this stuff?
I had a bit of a mixed impression, actually. Some part of me thought it has to be sexual. I feel we ask this on every episode, is it sexual? And I thought it has to be, but I'd also come across stuff saying it isn't. And I found myself thinking, I almost wish it was sexual, because that would be easier to understand. And yeah, I think it's something that's potentially difficult to understand from the outside, because it is unusual. I could say weird, really. I don't mean any offense by that word. It is weird. It's weirdness is practically what defines the entire thing. But yeah, my preconceptions, socially awkward people, maybe. And I really just didn't understand the attraction in it at all. So I got kind of stuck there. I knew it was a thing, but beyond that, I really didn't know.
Preconceptions. Mine were fairly similar to yours. I thought it was people who dressed up in animal costumes like theme park mascots and probably fucked. Simple as that.
Did you ever wonder why?
Oh, I had a lot of questions. Is it always sexual was top of that list. Rather than just is it sexual, is it always sexual? How do you pick your animal? Is there some kind of universally understood hierarchy? And then just why? I underlined that and put two question marks under it. Why? I guess my assumed answer is that you would dress up like that, the same as you would put on a mask in any situation. It's kind of escapism. And you might feel more confident hiding your actual face and characteristics. You're playing a role as someone else, and maybe that makes you feel and act differently than how you would normally. You feel a bit freer.
So a similar but different preconception from what I had.
Starting off with someone's, one of the first things that came up when I was reading was Field or Feld.io, which it turns out it's actually part of a dating site, but who knew that to start with? It was like an article.
I knew that.
Shocker.
In my experience, nothing good happens on Field.
Okay.
Nothing good happens on Kick.
Well, they had some information there that I was happy to scribble down.
To share.
Yeah, they were saying that it's a unique form of self-expression. It's about exploring and living parts of themselves, the people that identify as furries or play as furries. And it's an often misunderstood subculture. And there is a keen fascination and comfort in these anthropomorphized animals, kind of like Disney characters. And I think that was probably an important distinction, which is in that Google AI generated description as well. It's anthropomorphic animals. It's not people that put on some fur and a dog collar and want to be walked around the park and shit behind the bush.
That's something else, isn't it?
Oh, it's something else indeed.
Yeah, being treated as an animal, or a real animal, is something separate from furrydom.
I don't think this is that, yeah. This is all about the larger-than-life, exaggerated features, cartoon character presentation of animals.
Something I find really interesting about it is most of the animals seem to have a very similar kind of art style. They've got the sort of big Japanese manga style eyes, and they generally all kind of fit that aesthetic. I saw a few fursuits which were different, but overall there seems to be a fairly cohesive theme to them. Did you find that?
Having seen people at furry conventions on the sort of videos and stuff that we watched, yeah, I would say that sort of tracks, that fits. A lot of the heads, a lot of the bodies kind of look similar or the same.
What's that about? Why should they be the same art style? Where's that sourced from?
Maybe it is that kind of cartoony proportions and cartoony features, or maybe it's a practical element of it's easier to make a costume that fits that way. I mean, if you're going to be in a giant suit, if you decide to stick on a bunch of extra arms and shit, that's just more weight to drag around, right?
I saw that 50% of furries that dress up have a tail, and about 0.9% have wings. So there's, I don't know, something about tails really appeals to people. That was the most popular accessory. And wings, maybe it's the practicality. People are not into the wings.
I found when we were looking at what animals are who, there was a skewing towards foxes,
they're
wolves,
popular.
Dragons? And dragons, yep, are called something different. If you're a dragon or something that doesn't actually have fur, they sometimes get called scalies in the community. Not furries, scalies.
That's what it is. I saw scalies.
But there'll still be furry suits, as far as I'm aware.
That's really interesting that people gravitate towards specific animals more often than other ones, because they don't have to be one kind of animal. People often pick hybrids, I think, as well. And they sometimes pick an animal, a fox, for its, you know, cunning traits that it's known for, or a wolf for its independence and these kind of things. But other times people pick animals just because they like them and aren't using any of the stereotypical characteristics that we ascribe to those animals in their persona at all. So there's a bit of a mix of how people make up their character.
I didn't get into too much of what people have picked and why, or how they choose those animals. Actually, that's left one of my own questions unanswered. Maybe you've got the answer from what you were looking at. You know, how do they pick them, and is there any kind of hierarchy in what you pick? It didn't seem that there's any kind of groupings. You know, if I try and recall, the CSI episode had it like certain animals didn't like certain other animals. I didn't see that in the furry fandom research that I did now.
I'm not sure we should use the CSI episode as source material. From what I understand, they misrepresented the furry fandom quite severely, or not very kindly in the episode.
But that's a good example of outsider perception of this as a subculture, right? So you and I both were like, something sex. But that is probably shaped by what other people say about the community rather than the community itself?
I think so. Yeah, that's probably a someone's idea of what it was like then writ large. And CSI obviously was a very popular show, so that probably shaped a large number of people's perceptions of what fairydom is. In the CSI episode, they had a big orgy and someone got murdered in it, I think. And I just, there's this video of writhing fursuited bodies on the floor somewhere.
I see you remember that episode well.
Bookmarked.
But if we just walk it back for a second. So we said that it's not always about having a fur suit and dressing up in a full furry costume. It's kind of, that's the elaborate end of it, and going to conventions in these costumes and playing out your fantasy in real life with other people that are doing the same, because those things are expensive, like prohibitively expensive to own and make and maintain.
Several thousand dollars.
I've got a few different numbers around that as well, but it wasn't a cheap hobby to have one of these things. But entry level, you might come across some anthropomorphized animal artwork that someone self-drew on the internet, or some fan fiction, and that's quite often how people will get started and carry out most of their furry activity, right?
I saw that around 15% of people that identify as furries have a fursuit. So most don't.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the focus in the media is often sensationalized and focuses on the sexual side, which is a quote from that Field. I got field up. Good English. They said that that's just one part of the community, this whole sexual side to it, of people exploring a kink or a fetish. So trying to answer the question, is the furry community focused on sex? No, but do some people in the community fuck? Yes, clearly, because in any subgroup of people, there'll be someone
people
doing
people fuck.
I'm fairly sure when I go to the rock climbing wall, if I open enough doors, I'll find two people sweaty and covered in chalk fucking.
Is rock climbing sexual? Very likely. What's interesting about this is I was expecting to have my preconception that it was sexual reversed and find out that it wasn't sexual at all, and that's just a totally made up thing. And sure, it is for some people, but the vast majority it's not. But to my surprise, I found some data done by Fur Science, which is the scientific arm of the furry fandom. It does research into everything furry, and with their own data, there were some very interesting things that came up, which, well, let me tell you and see what you think of it.
So while you're finding the science, I think just in the same article, it was quite funny that it was answering some of, or it was asking questions that I wouldn't have thought to answer, which maybe comes up in your stats. But I thought it was quite funny there was a massive subsection entitled, "Are all furries gay?" Like that was what people had typed into a search engine to find it in their, you know, clickbaiting their own outrage. And they said there is a lot of crossover with the LGBTQ plus community, but it's not exclusively, of course, because without being the LGBTQ community, nothing is exclusively gay. Question mark.
According to a Fur Science study, around 10% of furries identify as straight, and the other 90% identify as something else.
Oh, can we play top trumps with stats? Because
oh yeah, hit me.
Ongoing analysis and trend research at furscience.com. Here we go. Demographically, mostly white.
Very white.
84% male, and one third identified as exclusively heterosexual.
Okay, yours are contrasting. Where was that from?
Furscience.com. Probably the same site.
Interesting. I wonder if having the women included altered that in what stats I'm looking at. Yeah, this is really interesting. An estimate. So they got 450 people, men and women, presumably in that 85 to 15 ratio of men to women. What percentage of male furries view porn? And the male guess was around 84%, and the female guess was 84%. But the actual figure was, for men, 96% of the 380 of men they interviewed, 96% of them said that they view furry pornography. So, is it still not sexual? Can that be true and say that it really isn't about anything sexual for most people?
Okay, I mean, I was going to say that my preconceptions did get challenged, and a lot of what I found, at least on the surface level of the first few pages, clicking through YouTube video after YouTube video after YouTube video. Mostly I was coming up with a lot of people going, it's not sexual, it's not about sex, or it's, and really pushing that it's been demonized in a lot of ways, or it's been tarred with that brush unfairly. But then what you've just said, I mean, does it necessarily have to, does your activity have to be sexual if you're watching porn related to it? Question mark.
I suppose if I watched rock climbing related porn and was also into rock climbing, would you then say rock climbing is a sexual activity for me?
If you like Spider-Man movies and go and beat off to Spider-Man porn, does it connect the two things? Does that make Spider-Man sexual?
Are they totally unrelated? I'm inclined to say, well, I'm not sure exactly, but it's certainly something.
So I can actually challenge my own challenged opinion. So sexlab.ca have a blog. And from a 2019 study by Sue, I think was the surname of the researcher, of 300 furries, all of whom were male, 99% said that they were sexually motivated. Come on, guys. I was just fighting your corner. Nope.
It depends. It depends how they were sourced, those people willing to do the surveys. If they only put ads on Pornhub, say, hey, do you want to participate in a furry survey? Then maybe there's bias in how those people were drawn. I don't know.
The glory hole of a cubicle at a convention might not have been the most
scientifically rigorous way to draw a sample.
Yes. Yeah.
Perhaps not.
And it was a study for sexlab.ca. So, meh.
Ah, look at that, guys. We keep investigating stuff and it keeps being sexual. Another great victory for sexlab.
Yeah.
But yeah. So the women, the guess on what percentage of female furries view furry porn, men guessed that 71% of women did it, and women guessed that 70% of women did it. Which again, male and female guesses identical, which they were for the male viewing figures, which is really interesting, I think. And the answer was 78% of women view furry porn. And I guess there's some wiggle room in that. Do you view furry porn, Zin, several times a day? I would say that's a yes. You viewed it once, that would be a no. So I guess there's a bit of interpretation in, do you view furry pornography? Or that does imply an ongoing situation.
So you're right. We don't know what the context of the question was. If it was, have you ever, and therefore you're going in the box of views furry porn, or if it's, do you habitually, or would you say that you regularly view people's drawings of foxes with big dicks, then you end up in that bracket.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to, it's a bit of a vague question. I hope they reported the same question they asked, but how people interpret that is kind of up to them, really. Something that else is quite interesting is 34% of the interviewed furries who were drawn from a convention and the internet, I believe, 34% of them had very negative attitudes towards non-furry pornography, which is interesting.
There's a third of them that say human-on-human porn is weird.
Or they have a negative attitude to it, is what the survey question is. And towards furry pornography, well, yeah, so it's sort of mixed and negative, mostly negative for regular porn, and for furry porn it's sort of mixed to positive. Yeah, mostly men leading that charge, women being more neutral about it.
Shocking, men leading the pornography charge.
Yeah, the bane of our generation. It's like heroin.
If there was ever going to be a charge that I would expect men to lead, it would be that one.
Their own destruction. Yes, that's really interesting.
Okay.
But also, one more thing. 65% of women and 25% of men said furry pornography did not influence their entrance to the fandom at all.
Okay, that's more than half. I feel positive about that stat. Like, they didn't get into it for the anthropomorphized animal fucking. That's nice.
Well, 25% of the men didn't.
Oh. So, I thought you said 60-something.
70, that was the women. Women are acting with greater non-porn integrity here. And for men, the remaining 75% is split across barely to completely. And to be fair, at the completely end, it's a pretty narrow bit of the wedge. But it's fair to say a majority of men are influenced somewhat sexually by when they were choosing to get into the fandom. According to this data, and this by is, Fur Science.
This is all the data from furscience.com. Fact check it yourself, people. Look at the staggering statistics. You know, put away your dick and double click for a change.
And most furries have no strong preference over pornographic or non-pornographic furry artwork. They just like it all.
Okay, can I let that one hang in the air? I'm not really sure what to do with it.
Yeah, it's a confusing picture. Well, actually, it's a very clear-cut picture, according to the data here, but it's in contrast to the voiced opinions of pretty much every furry that I've seen interviewed about it. I don't know, if there's something not adding up in this story, whether it's fur sciences, possibly suspect scientific methods, not that I wish to cast doubt on the noble house of fur science.
You don't know what's going to show up at your door if you do, though. Yeah.
Jesus.
Good.
Maybe they're top quality scientists and this is all accurate. Maybe it's something else going on. I wouldn't like to pass judgment. It's just interesting that it's in such contrast to what people say.
I mean, even if I go to one article that I have already mentioned, so they were saying that this sort of comfort and it's a misunderstood subculture of anthropomorphized animals. They did kind of immediately contradict itself in the article by a paragraph later saying, seemingly unrelated, saying that it first took shape in the 1970s and there was a link to WebMD article titled Furry Sex. No one can get away from it.
Maybe it's Freud's influence. We just think everything abnormal has to be sexual in some way.
So I think you probably came across this as well, though, right? So according to this, it started in about 1977, or at least that was the first event that touted being a furry event that was alongside a cartoon organization. And then, I mean, this is all pre-internet, just kind of organic growth and, I guess, magazines and meetups. And people still making their own fan art. And the first convention of its own kind, so a furry convention, is supposed to have been in 1989. And that's, again, in the great state of California. Where else was it? Well, that was weird, started in California, something we've mentioned already.
Arm wrestling.
I wonder if there's a crossover.
Getting folded up by a hench fox. There's probably a porn of that.
More like a twink in cat ears, no?
Stronger than he looks.
The fursuits weren't as expensive in the 70s. They were saying that it's mostly about self-expression and contentment. You know, people's inner, truer superhero side of themselves that was hard to access during their 9-to-5. And that, as you pointed out, the creating of these intricate fursuits is expensive and time-consuming, and not everyone has the resources or willingness to do it. So if you were to look at a furry convention, it's anything from the full-on suits to maybe just a set of cat ears and probably a tail. Mm-hmm. As you said, they love a tail.
I find the identity aspect really interesting because that seems to be a pretty much consistent theme across all furries, is that when they're dressed up, they're putting on a character, they're adopting someone, they're behaving as someone that's not quite themselves. And that can be an idealized version of themselves. They wish they were this confident, because a lot of them report anxiety, and when they have their character on, then they can be someone else, they can act confident, and it's a way to kind of explore what that would be like and maybe bring it into their daily life, or as it's described, the superego, the best parts of us. Other fairies like playing as a character that's just got different traits, not necessarily something that they aspire to. It might even be darker sides of their nature that they can play out, or, you know, shyness, or so. I think it means different things to different people. I think it's a way to experiment with identity. That's definitely a big part of it, is this experimentation with identity. I kind of think it's separate. That's a separate bit than the animals. The animals is kind of the theme for this idea. Why it's animals, I don't know. Maybe they're anthropomorphized animals. Maybe it's that how we can associate animals with certain traits. But does that make any sense?
Yep. I think there's a few bits that touch on this, and it comes into some of the people they interviewed for a Guardian article in July 2024. This was talking about how it's the Guardian. Let's bear that in mind. Quite left-leaning, I would say, from the tone of the article, certainly. But they were really pushing that it's more of an artistic thing, and this, you're forming this avatar, which made me think that it's more about the the self-confidence of the almost anonymity of playing a role on a character.
Mm-hmm.
You can disassociate from yourself and be someone else. And because you don't look like yourself, some of them choose not to talk when they're in their furry suits. So they don't even necessarily have a voice. But it gives you more confidence to act in ways that you don't when you are yourself, almost because you have less accountability. Not that
no one knows who you are under that suit.
Yes, but not that you would necessarily have to go and do something bad, but it also helps you make a little bit of a mental separation, like, oh, I, Andrew, couldn't go up to that attractive fox and talk to it because I'm just not cool enough. But I've got a big furry head on with three dongs hanging off the top of it, and I'm like...
they don't do that.
Mine does. So dong's a lot, super confident. He can go up and talk to that sexy-ass fox. Yes,
but yes, minus the dongs, I agree with that. And I think there's also, it's almost like armor in some way. You're shielded from the real world and you're seeing it through these eye holes.
It is that. What was quite cool that this guy, Dr. Samuel Conway, was saying is that it's very similar to dressing up in characters for something like a Comic-Con. You've got that. You can change your personality. You can act more like a different character.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel more confident to do so when you're dressed up. But something like Comic-Con are consumer fandoms. They're someone else's idea, someone else's story, someone else's character. And you're living in it or playing that role. But furries are a producer fandom. So it's more personal and therefore people have got more of a connection with the character they're playing.
I like that. People tend to invent their characters, I think. Maybe exclusively invent their characters. I also find it interesting that it's called a fandom. To me, that you have to be a fan of something for it to be a fandom. And I don't think this is allied to any particular cartoon or cultural thing other than itself, as far as I can tell.
I wonder if that distinction is just there as a self-identity, because I came across it two or three times as saying that we are fans, not fetishists.
It might be called a fandom just to separate it from being a fetish.
It's not a creepy kink. It's just a costume.
I mean, I think it is a kink for some people. I suspect strongly from the data, and you're going to find that with anything, virtually. There will always be people that find whatever part of it sexual, and most furries will admit, yeah, there's a sexual aspect for some people, but it doesn't dominate the scene.
It doesn't dominate it, yeah. I was going to say, I enjoy a McDonald's burger, but I very rarely enjoy a McDonald's pornography. Doesn't hit the same as a Big Mac.
No, it's just something about it missing. So what furries do when they hang out with each other at these kind of events and things, it's mostly just talk and be normal. It's not orgies, it's not coke-fueled benders, it's not anything unusual. It just looks like a bunch of people hanging out just wearing fursuits, which I think is really interesting.
Whereas last time we talked about the arm wrestling, you were much more like, yeah, I could definitely see myself getting into this. I could go along and want to fold people over tables, whatever macho thing you were saying. Yeah, do you feel the same way about furries?
No, but I do like role-playing games. I play D&D. I have a character in D&D who is a 250-year-old, leathery, greasy dwarf who's a renowned coward and thief. And he's really fun to play. I like to think this is a separation from my real identity of being heroic and generous. So it's fun to play someone who's a real piece of shit.
Yeah, that guy sounds sexy. Bring him on. Replace you.
But I have a lot of fun role-playing as him because he's someone, I could just be someone else for a little bit. It's not as immersive as putting on a costume. I'm not really acting it as him in the same way that LARPing people do. LARPing is live action role-play, if anyone is not aware of that. You know, even fancy dress parties, almost everyone, maybe not everyone likes a fancy dress party, but fancy dress parties are popular among adults and among normies. Just regular people quite often like a fancy dress party. And that's one end of this spectrum of role play, I think, because you feel different when you dress up differently.
That's exactly it. You get to change your identity and your actions based on the costume a bit. Why is Halloween so massive, especially amongst adults who want to cut loose for a bit, kind of as someone else, as a character? I think that's what some of the more innocent side of the furry community is doing, just rather than waiting for one day a year. It's something they want to do more often almost.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. Did you find that people, furries, were wearing fursuits kind of 24/7, or do they limit it to certain times in private, in public?
I didn't find any of that. It was definitely something that people approached as a hobby, and probably for good reason. You couldn't wear a fursuit all the time. It's heavy, it's going to smell, and maintaining it's not going to be the easiest thing ever. We are not animals. It's not part of us. Therefore, it's dead or fake fur. It's just kind of gross.
You have to wash it, really, like clothes.
Coming back to that in a second, some thoughts on that. But I think as I was reading these sort of articles, and the one from The Guardian and the kind of more innocent ones, people extolling the artistic side and that it doesn't have a sort of sexual element and it's more about expressing themselves. And often they were coming back to this, it's a very inclusive and a judgment-free community as a furry. I was thinking, you know what? I'm wrestling, maybe not. Being a furry, maybe yes. Maybe could do that.
It sounds like it's a very positive place to be, generally very accepting of you. However, I did read some interesting, granted they're just YouTube comments, but I thought they showed a bit of insight or perspective. First one is, a community founded on inclusion above all else will find itself attracting the extremes that aren't accepted anywhere else.
You're starting to veer towards the darker side of furries, right?
Yeah, a little bit. And veering back again a little bit, the other quote was, I'm a furry and the furry fandom is far from accepting. They only accept you if you share similar political views and opinions. She's probably referring to the binary nature of US politics here, of are you a Democrat, are you a lib, or are you a right wing?
Or possibly aligned to that, the fact that no one seems to be able to hold a middle ground view anymore. It's either you have to be super inclusive and a gay advocate and all up for trans and everything else that banner encompasses, or you have to be vehemently anti it. It doesn't feel like anyone's able to take a middle ground or at least see the opinion of the other side. And furries as a subset of our current culture will probably end up with that in it as well. There's going to be either ends of the spectrum and people don't really seem to be all that able to listen to the other side.
I think it's probably overwhelmingly left wing, I suspect, given what I've read and what I know, particularly because it's so queer heavy or LGBTQ heavy, which are not exclusively, but often tend to be left wing supporting. So I could see those people being certainly guarded around right wing people that wanted to be involved, because they probably feel right wing generally as opposed to trans rights and things, and they probably feel threatened in that sense.
You didn't come across alt furries then that were trying to infiltrate the community for a few years, or maybe are in their own community, as in people that would have a fox costume but then would also be walking around with like a swastika armband on it and stuff like that?
Oh wow. That's something.
Yes, fox, there we go. There we go. So, rise of the alt-right. There's been alt furries adopting swastikas. That came from, that was that same Guardian article mentioned it. Yep.
I imagine that was pretty niche, but just too fantastical to ignore.
Yeah.
That's an image, man. By the way, do you know what that CSI episode was called?
I do not.
Fur and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Someone has a podcast called that now, I think. Free plug for them.
Fur and Loathing?
Yep, Fur and Loathing.
Very interesting. Is it a furry podcast?
I think it's exploring furry culture, yeah. And like anti-furry culture as well. Like, why do you hate us?
Well, they're very easy to hate, I guess, because they're so visibly different.
And they're all...
That's enough.
And that there's a huge or a larger percentage of them being under 25, insufferable, annoying young people with their views and their rock 'em, suck 'em robots and their stickers.
And their non-agony knees, damn them.
Yeah. They're perfectly functioning joints.
But I think it's an easy target, isn't it? Something so visibly different and seemingly non-threatening. If people will feel quite safe in shitting on that kind of stuff.
Yep. Someone quoted in that article said furry culture was born out of internet culture, out of queer nerds and their want for a space or a thing to express themselves. But yeah, it's when you are already painting yourself in with those kind of words, those are exactly the trigger words of people that hate that kind of stuff, and not necessarily hate, but find it easy to make fun of or to target you, that you need to change how you are. If we look at the link I sent you last night was absolutely wild. This
That was madness.
I can't remember what his name is. I almost don't want to give him the credit. I just mentioned him briefly, but he was like some
Rodrigo or something.
Yeah, I thought it was a parody at first, but it was like this street preacher who claimed to be reformed from doing Santeria and voodoo and being in gang, Holmes. I wanted to kill people. I wanted to kill myself, Holmes. He just came up to these three kids who had kind of half-made furry costumes on in a playground one day and just berated them for 5 minutes about how they needed to be found by Jesus.
Yeah.
I attended a ROC event at the park where I noticed a group wearing masks near the playground. Led by the Holy Spirit, I interviewed them. Children were drawn to them because of the masks, but their interactions with the children concerned me. One person in the group wore a shirt saying gay furry. It became clear to me the agenda trying to be pushed to those children.
What if I told you I know people with video games that cast out demons, heal the sick, and win souls on the internet, and they play Fortnite and all types of games for real? What if I told you that you could really be used in ministry on the internet with your, and I guarantee you God will take your account to the nations, bro, and you'll have a millions of subscribers if you glorify him and do it for like his glory.
Yeah, that was tough to watch. I mean, he could have been worse. There was a sort of veneer of attempting to understand them, but it was just preachy nonsense. No offense to fairies, but I was very surprised to find myself thinking, wow, the fairy here is by miles the more normal person in this interaction. And that's not something I ever thought initially I would think.
Okay, so let's get onto some of the controversies of the furry community, or the darker side of the furry community. You want to kick this off light or heavy?
Well, one question people ask is, are furries zoophiles, which is people that are sexually attracted to animals?
Oh, you've gone for the heavy end of the scale.
Oh, I've got heavier, mate. I have heavier. I don't like it, but yeah. So the short answer is no, it's different. But you can see it's not a very big leap to think, there's very definitely some people who are into furry porn, which is animals like humans. Are there people that take it one step further and just subtract the human part of that? And the answer is yes, there are people like that, but it is not a defining feature of being a furry, as far as I can tell. However, people that are zoophiles can also be furries, I think.
Yeah,
I like to imagine it's a very, very small percentage of the furry population and very small percentage generally who are zoophiles, but there is some crossover, although they are separate things. But there's also going to be zoophiles who are bankers. So,
and dog walkers.
Yeah. So you're going to find them everywhere, I guess. But it's certainly, furry is not a million miles from it. It's not the craziest leap I've ever heard. There's worse than that, to be honest, which I won't get into. But certainly one popufer, which is a popular furry, if you didn't know, on the interwebs got exposed for zoophilia and worse. And it was general animal abuse, and it was a big stink in the furry community. And yeah, I had to turn off the video I was watching discussing this guy, because it just got sicker and sicker. And yeah, I like to think that is coincidental to the furry fandom, and just happened to be a popular person unrelated to his more depraved side. But yeah, that was very tough watching.
Unfortunately, we're probably speaking for the community of saying it's not most of them. It's going to be the smaller percentage, but you can see how there is a crossover, because there is animals and there's the sexual element involved, as you've proven, as mm-hmm. they've proven themselves from the stats. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. if you Venn diagram that, they're going to cross over at some point. Which famous-ish furry are you referring to?
Kiro the wolf.
That is not one of the ones I came across, I think.
I also had a look at A Thing from Space, who's a popular furry YouTuber with 200,000 subscribers. Although I thought their videos were mostly low-effort crap, and they usually had about 2,000 views per video. So based on the standard of the modern YouTuber, I was pretty underwhelmed with A Thing from Space. And I also looked at another one called Strawberry Majira. They put in more effort into their channel, I thought, but it was pretty much what you'd expect. You know, I got a new fursuit. This is how the hands work. I went to this convention. I met these people, and just general YouTuber stuff. Nothing particularly special. And Kiro was one of these. Sorry, Kiro the Wolf. He's his formal name. Was one of these YouTubers as well. Relatively popular, quite good on screen, but some group chats got exposed by someone. A self-confessed zoophile decided that the stuff Kiro was into was too much, and decided to expose him.
Yeah, I think the general vibe I got was that furries hate zoophiles as much as anyone, possibly more because they've got reason to, because it's sullying their own name and it's giving them a bad rap. But I came across some similar stories here. Not just zoophiles, but other kinds of files.
Oh yeah, there's some of that too.
So if you're squeamish about hearing people do terrible things to objects that don't deserve it, or persons that don't deserve it, maybe you want to cover your ears for a bit, but there's definitely a darker side to the community.
I don't think we need to go in any further than this, to be honest. I think that's enough.
You've peeled the lid off. I'm going in. There was some truly sickening individuals inside that community. You want to hear about some? Let me tell you a story. I've got my book out.
It'd be a shame to waste your research. It'd be a shame if I left this conversation happier than I started.
And some of this was covered in without much detail at all. So if you want a top level summary, Visual Venture as a YouTuber, he's done a little dive into the furry community. He called the video himself the dark side of furry community, which is a bit clickbaity as far as titles go. Mm-hmm. And he only skimmed over these things. So I had to go and I just had to go and find out more myself.
See how deep the rabbit hole goes.
See how far into my pants, mate.
Oh my God. Oh my God. What did I just say? Oh, Jesus. Scrub that. Fuck.
In context, that's really bad. Ugh. Okay, so this particularly horrible one that was mentioned went by the furry name of Shadow Wolfess. Come across that person?
Nope.
Real name, William J. Clark. If you want to read about them in badly written internet format, they're on Encyclopedia Dramatica. So this was someone who openly talked about and promoted and posted on DeviantArt his very poor quality drawings of the furry fan community.
Sidebar, when we were kids and we uploaded our crap to DeviantArt, I remember that was my first exposure to anthro art, and it seemed perfectly innocent back then, which it probably was. I never thought much of it. I was like, oh, that's weird. I've never seen this before. People really into this stuff.
Yeah, DeviantArt comes up as one of the go-to places for posting your own furry art.
Doesn't surprise me.
So his drawings are pretty shitty quality, and they all usually involve something fairly horrible, like quite graphic and weird sex stuff with animals, but it looks like it was drawn by a child at like the colouring station of a family restaurant. How shoddy and crap it is. But that's not the extent of his grossness. He was also quite proud of the fact that he made fursuits, and he would sell fursuits, and he would wear them to conventions and stuff. Mm-hmm. But some of the ones that he made were just, they looked like something out of a post-apocalypse horror show of someone getting melted with their fursuit still on. It's all patchworks of colors and different furs and stuff.
And saggy and horrible.
Yep. And it was really like, they sometimes referred to it as carpet sample because it looked like a bunch of sewn together crappy carpet samples. It's one of his fursuits. But what made them more disgusting was how foul smelling they were.
Oh, God.
And that's because this guy...
Oh no!
Would recycle the fur, and what he would recycle it from were plush toys that he had had sex with. So he was really into, like, he was sexually attracted to plushy soft toys, soft toy animals, and he would fuck them, and then after he was done fucking them a lot, he would cut the fur off them and make them into fursuits, potentially to sell over the internet.
Fuck me, just to sell. Just to wear. Oh my God. That's fucking awful. Yep. It's somehow actually not as bad as I was expecting.
Your zoophiles. I've came across one of those as well.
There's organizations attempting to promote zoophilia into the mainstream. I don't know if it's illegal. I assume it's illegal. It ought to be.
Absolutely.
But yeah, there are some people that are quite... Sorry? It is.
Yes, it's bestiality. That's illegal.
Oh, good. It does ring a bell now you mention it. Is it illegal in the US too? They're a bit backwards back there.
Who knows what it will be and won't be. Who knows what I'm going to do? Nobody knows.
Shoot them all, that's what I say. Shoot them all.
So one of these self-proclaimed, didn't shy away from it, doubled down on it when being called out on it, zoophiles, was one who was also a self-confessed VR hypnotist YouTuber who had like thousands of views on their kind of normal-ish channels. And they were called...
Oh, what's their call sign? What are they called? I think I know this one.
Oh, maybe I didn't write it down. It was a girl as well. That's why it was,
Is it like
weird.
Shadow Wolf or something?
It was something. I could look it up in a minute if we're that interested. Or maybe we just don't give them the coverage.
I know the one you're talking about. This was one of the people I was thinking of who were promoting Open Zoophilia through a VR avatar, not their actual real face.
And they had like private Discord channels, so that, and they would get a lot younger members of the furry community and their hypnotist jargon stuff to sign up to their Discord, and they would have VR sessions with them where they'd be doing God knows what. And then once they got into these Discord channels, there was like full of gross pictures of animals, some of it drawn, some of it not, like just puckered dogs' bums. And then there was a whole bunch of chat logs that came out of them preying on these kids that they knew were 12 to 15 with chat logs. But instead of backing away from it, as I said, she had a kind of a coming out video in 2021 and saying that zoos are misunderstood, and then started this organization that she claimed was tax exempt to try and get zoophilia legalized, which was all just rubbish. It was just a way to try and get people to give her money. But this was reported by a former staff member of hers that she just couldn't cope with it anymore and had to go through too many specific pages of lewd dog on human material.
Oh my God.
Look at it.
Yeah, I think this isn't misunderstood. It's accurately understood, which is why people are so vehemently against it. Like, I'm sorry you were dealt this random fetish when you were born. That's not your fault, but fucking hell, man, don't act on it.
That's, again, if you kind of just want to dress up a bit and go to a convention with other people that dress up and you don't know about this, like if you do genuinely have some innocence in your life and people are like, oh, you must be having sex with kids and dogs, and you're like, what? It must be awful. The whole community being tarred with these people's brush.
Yeah. Let's go back to the actual furry community a little bit. I feel we've gone as far as, or further actually, than I like.
Wait, I've got more. Did you come across cub content? Yes?
Yeah.
No? Yeah, okay. Yeah. I won't go into detail. That's people drawing furry art sexually of younger animals, though. Basically, make your own pedophilia, but put some ears on it, and therefore it's not illegal. It's just, that must have been the worst thing I came across. I was like, I closed the book at that point.
Yeah, that's depraved. Whew, I was ending up veering into that kind of stuff in the last video I was watching, and I just had to turn it off. Thought, nope, I don't need to know about any of this. Thanks for filling me in on what I missed out, though. let's get back on topic. Let's get back on topic.
Can we stay with the darker side, though? I've got some non-sexual dark stuff.
Go on, then.
I say it's non-sexual.
I don't know why I keep saying go on after I keep saying let's not do this, but go on.
Self-loathing and morbid curiosity. So there was actually a triple murder in California in 2016 in the furry community, committed by furries or members of the furry community.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I guess, is maybe just a sort of sensationalist news story. And they did look like gutter trash people, to be fair. So whether they had an animal head on at the time or this. Is neither here nor there. So there was two parents, three kids aged 17, 6, and 9. They were a family of furries, so the parents were furries and would take the kids to these conventions. I don't necessarily think that's great. I think they need to decide for themselves that they should be into it, and you shouldn't really push it on them.
I would agree with that. I suppose you could argue they did decide for themselves, but yeah, that feels to me complicated, that.
Yeah. And I guess you could say that cartoon characters are for kids. So from an innocent child view, then they're just surrounded by like 300 Bugs Bunnies and it's all good.
But you wouldn't think twice about introducing your kids to D&D, would you? At age 9?
You probably would if you were a pearl-clutching conservative who thought that D&D was the rise of Satanism back in the day.
Hail Satan!
Anyway, this family of furries, they would do conventions, so they were all involved in the community, and they met other people through the furry community, and their 17-year-old was actively involved, you know, was posting on social media of her and her costumes and all that kind of stuff. So she was involved by her own rights. She was befriended by a 21 and a 25-year-old in the community that the parents knew as well, so they all knew who these guys were. But when it started to become a romantic relationship, let's say, the parents were not keen on that. Their 17-year-old being in a relationship with a 25-year-old guy. I should probably say the 17-year-old was a girl.
Uh-huh.
And the 25-year-old was a dude. Shocking. So they banned her from seeing him from seeing her. But
a strategy that's known to work, by the way.
Yes. That's exactly what's going to happen. Okay, Mum. I won't see that guy that I love.
You know best, Mum.
But yeah, neither side took to that particularly kindly. So these two guys arrive at the house in the night to, at best, to romantically run off with the 17-year-old. At worst, it's kidnapping a minor. So she went out to the truck.
True love.
Of course it was a truck. She went out to meet him in the truck. And then the 21-year-old went inside with a shotgun and shot the mum, the dad, and thankfully not the two younger kids, but some family friend who was sleeping over on the couch.
Jesus Christ. So it wasn't the fairies doing the murdering? Furthering?
The 21-year-old was also in the
fairy. Oh, he was a fairy.
Season. Yep.
All right.
All furries. All furries. It's furry on furry violence, my friend.
Well, further.
Let's not talk about the guy who was having just a relationship with underage girls through DeviantArt. We're going to skip over that.
We're really off topic now. I think we should cut half of this.
Nope. This is all. It's all in the furries. It's all in the furry community. Okay, the last one. I'm not going to talk about just them financially scamming each other like any community do. Like, I'm going to make you a costume and then just not delivering.
That's just good practice. That.
Just people being people.
People being people.
I'll give you a jumping off point. I'm not going to do any more terrible stuff. But I thought it was an interesting fact, though, that the Midwest Furry Fest was the target of America's second largest chemical weapon terrorist attack in December 2014.
Wow, I never heard of that.
So there, and there have to this date been no arrests for that, but it was a chlorine bomb that was set off in the stairwell of the, I want to say, Regent Hotel that it was being held at, and 19
people... In the Ferdatorium.
Ferdadome. But 19 people were seriously injured and hospitalized. But yeah, that's a...
Wow, did not know that.
Crimes in the furry community.
I suspect it's the kind of thing the police aren't particularly bothered by investigating. I don't know. Maybe I'm doing the police an injustice there. Maybe it was committed by a mastermind that couldn't possibly be traced. Domestic terrorist.
Maybe it was a furry hater. Maybe it was a furry themselves. Maybe it was an alt-right furry. One of those Nazi foxes.
Mm.
Sorry. You wanted to backtrack a bit, and I've just...
Let's backtrack a bit. Here's a fun quote, also from a YouTube comment. It's lame that they act normal together instead of have orgies. I wish they had fight clubs. I feel like furry wrestling on WWE level would be the best shit ever. Just imagine a squirrel pile driving a wolf. I would watch that. That would be gold. That is a ready-made TV hit, for sure. Maybe we need to make this happen.
That must exist in Japan, surely. They've got all these game shows where they have outrageous stuff. You have to put on like a giant costume and play or something.
I'm sure they've got something along those lines. It's the sort of thing the Japanese would be into. No offense to them. But what other fun quotes do I have in here? This is quite insightful. If you don't adapt into your character, you're doing it wrong. You're just standing there with something on your face.
So, role play or die.
Yeah, I was saying, that's the point, right? You've got to role play something.
Go hard or go home, furry style.
Be someone you're not for a little bit. Otherwise, yeah, you've just got something on your face and you're just being you. That's not the point of it. Clearly, this person believes that the point is not to be, I won't say not be yourself, but don't be the person you are without the mask on.
You wear the mask for a reason. The costume and the mask, they all serve a purpose. As we mentioned, I think there's a degree of identity separation in it. And if you're not doing that, maybe you're not getting the full benefit of the community. If you do just feel kind of uncomfortable and awkward standing in a fursuit, then A, you're probably a normie, and B, you're holding on to some of those inhibitions that the rest of the community are quite pleased to be able to let go of when they put their fursuit on.
That sounds accurate to me. Another quote here. I 100% think I was a cat in a past life. No, I know I'm human. I just wish I was a cat. She answers a question that I forgot to ask earlier, but one that did come up was, do people know that they're people? Do they think they're animals? Would they rather be animals? And I think there was a study that showed fairies do live in the real world. They have a identical grasp of reality to the normal person. Higher proneness to fantasy, but nonetheless, a still good grasp of what reality is. So no, they know they're not animals. It is just role play. They're just like animals. That's very popular.
The furry community is into anthropomorphized animals. That is, putting human characteristics onto animals specifically. There might be some that say they feel more comfortable in that persona fursona. Sorry, got to get the lingo right. Mm-hmm. And there'll be some that would say that they like animals more than they do humans and that kind of stuff. But the human element is a strong defining feature of the furry community because of, you know, they use like clothes on their costumes as well. People who more identify as or think that they're not entirely human spiritually are called something else. I found out they're called Therians.
Or Therians, sorry.
Therians. Yeah.
Therians and other kin.
They believe that they are not completely human. Yeah.
And I think there's some of them in the furry community, but the crossover is small. Or it's maybe it's not small, but you don't have to be one of them to be a furry. Furries know that they're humans.
Yeah, for sure. I think, again, if you Venn diagram it because they are closely related, there'll be some crossover.
I think the character aspect they play, or the furriness, is about having a different human character, and the animal costume is really just to symbolize that. I don't think it's about acting like a fox. It's about acting like a different person that happens to look like a fox.
Mm-hmm. I think that sounds about right. From our outsider's perspective, that's what it certainly looks like, let's say.
Yeah, that's what I think, from what I can tell. Next quote, Byzantium is my goals character, what I would want myself to be. He's less anxious, more of a chilled, laid-back kind of character, instead of being high anxiety like I am.
That, I think, is a common theme as well. There was a National Geographic bit on furries. There's short clips of it available on YouTube if you want to see that. And they interview some guys who are in the furry community. And that's almost directly what this guy said. I think he was like a medical grad student or something like that. He says, in my real life, I'm the socially awkward, anxious grad student. But in my furry character's name here, I'm more outgoing, more fun, and find it easier to talk to people. You know, it's dissociative identity almost.
Mm-hmm. Something that people ask as well is, do furries have jobs? And turns out the answer is yes. And there's quite a lot of people in very professional roles, military contractors and pilots and things who are furries, who like to keep their furry and professional lives separated because obviously it's not well understood or accepted. Yeah, did I find that surprising? No, not really. I kind of figured that there would be high-functioning professionals who also have this desire to engage in this world.
I would think that they are in a minority, though, because as we said, the community is quite largely skewed towards a younger demographic. From Furry Science's own research, largely under 25 or thereabouts. Mm. So you haven't usually developed a super high-functioning professional career by that point, to say that it's not possible. But I would guess that there will be older members of that community as well, and they won't be as widely found.
If you're younger, you're less likely to have a well-developed sense of identity as well, which is maybe why one of the reasons that the furry community is younger. It's playing around with identity and exploring who they are or who they want to be.
True. That's a very valid crossover. I think the other thing is, especially for, as we've seen, being a furry encompasses a whole bunch of different activities. And I guess it's, if you are taking a furry to be just the people that go to conventions, you would need to have either a parent or yourself to have a decent paid job of some description, because those things are not cheap to make, as we said. So it can be tens of thousands of dollars for a whole fur suit. And the heads can go anywhere from 700 to like 3,000 from what I saw. That's just the head part.
I need to get into fursuit creation.
I've got a ready supply that you can butcher here.
No, thank you for that. Another thing I liked was someone had a zipper tag, which was written on, pull the ruin the magic. So when they get out of their suit, which I thought was funny.
Did you see any of these things, like the coverage of inside of furry conventions?
Yeah, a little bit.
Where they have the headless lounges, for example, a headless room. So it's like a cooled area that you can go into to take your furry costume's head off so that you don't exactly, you can separate that from the main hall.
So you can have a breather.
You can have a breather and you can dry out or steam your furry head to make it stink of Cheeto dust less, presumably. Stale Dorito powder.
One thing that made me laugh, but I think there's maybe an explanation for it, is on Fur Science, again, 45% of furries reported that they lived with their parents. which initially made me laugh about the stereotype of basement dwellers. But given what you said about the majority being under 25, I'm pretty sure 45% of the general population lives with their parents if you're under 25.
I can't say for sure, but I'm fairly certain that your kind subsist largely off of chicken nuggets and Doritos.
Is it sexual? Turns out, kind of, yeah, sometimes. It's not sexual.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely a skewing towards the sexual inside that community more than you might find in a different community.
That's fair to say. I'm sure there are people...
Not piano teachers, though. They fucking bone.
Oh, piano teachers are well known for getting down. Top shaggers, all of them.
Such a Britishism.
Top shagger.
It was a bloody good shag.
10% of the fandom is formally diagnosed with autism, which is a 5 times higher rate than the general population. Interesting. Thoughts?
I don't really know much about autism. I've known some people who are autistic, and I couldn't tell you what defines them characteristically.
No, I don't really see what... There's obviously some sort of correlation in here. Maybe it's to do with struggling with social norms or recognizing social cues, feeling like an outsider, something like that. But being able to act in a certain way with a fursuit on to enable that is difficult in real life.
Perhaps it is the not being judged by what people see when they look at you rather than the suit. So you choose to represent yourself in a certain way, but possibly also the artistic side, because if I'm recalling correctly, as a man of science, don't the autists also cross over as artists? Isn't there like a higher tendency towards artistic flair in the autistic?
I don't know, maybe. I don't know enough about autism.
Just saying words now. But it kind of fits into where your perceptions, your preconceptions challenged by doing this research and by this discussion, maybe.
Yes and no. It's actually more sexual than I thought it was before going into this. I think there's evidence, more evidence in favor of that pervasiveness than I was expecting. I was expecting that to turn out to be a myth, but there's definitely some reality to it. And from this discussion, have I changed my opinions about anything? No, I think we've come to similar conclusions, I think, which I came to from my research, and I don't think your take on this has been wildly different from mine. What do you think?
I think, if anything, I have thought of them more kindly since doing the reading and seeing that the majority, or at least the outward majority of the community, are not into it in a sexual way, or at least on the outset. I think you could go into it, maybe that's, I'm focused on the physical furry conventions and stuff, but I think it would be possible to enjoy being a furry without suddenly being bombarded with sexual stuff.
Yes, I think so.
Primarily. So maybe it's actually less sexual than I thought. And I think that the pushback against them has been like quite a lot sensationalized. So you only hear about the bad stuff. You won't necessarily hear about how supportive and stuff the community is, unless you go digging around and ask yourself, what is a furry, and look up these things that we have looked up.
I think in most cases, being a furry seems pretty harmless.
Yeah.
It's weird, for sure, and they're easy victims, but for the most part, live and let live, I guess.
It seemed to, from people's opinions inside of the interviews and stuff, it was a quite queer-friendly, lack of shame, non-physical identity barrier society or subculture. And that's especially in the polarized political world that we find ourselves in, that's something that conservative traditional views will want to push back on quite strongly. Mm-hmm. And we'll end up with things like around this thing called the litter box controversy in 2021. It sounded a lot like the satanic panic of the, I want to say, early 80s, mm-hmm. when Dungeons and Dragons was becoming more popular. And, you know, very, very Christian and very, very conservative people, primarily in the States, thought it was kids worshipping the devil and that Dungeons and Dragons was converting their kids to Satanism. And you had this spike in people reporting teenagers gathering as satanic rituals and stuff like this, like an actual panic about nothing. But this litter box controversy around furries there was some conservatives said, hey, what are we going to do next? Put litter boxes in schools for kids who identify as a cat, you know, talking about people's gender identification and belittling it and saying, oh, kids are going to start identifying as dogs and cats in schools now, and we're going to have to just put up with it if the left get their way. But then about another 20 of them kind of latched onto that and took the fact that he'd said it or it had been reported somewhere else as that's what's happening. And they ran with it. Yeah, they echo chambered it. They just kept repeating it to each other almost. You know, Joe Rogan had it on his podcast, which obviously gave a fucking huge internet spike. And Republicans were calling it a crisis before having to realize that, oh, it was someone almost facetiously saying it and having to kind of walk that back.
It doesn't matter to the Republicans or anyone really manufacturing for politics. It doesn't matter what the truth was. If it makes your point, if it serves your interests, yeah, tell people. Truth is kind of don't be so naive, Andrew. Truth's irrelevant.
Truth is subjective.
Truth's what I want it to be.
There was some truth to this thing about litter boxes or litter being in schools, and it's for even sadder reasons than us saying that, oh, kids can be whatever they want. If they want to self-identify as a goldfish and I'm going to dunk them in water and submerge them there for 8 hours, that's fine. It was worse, in fact. Like, some schools said, actually, we do keep some litter in the back of the closet here in case we're in a lockdown scenario, i.e. there's a fucking school shooter and we're told to lock the kindergarten kids in the classroom and one of them
and
has to go
shit
pee
somewhere.
Yeah.
Fuck
which
me.
which is a lot worse. Like, the real problem is not furries.
A real problem. A real problem that kills people. Kills kids. Yeah. Who's the real villain?
The cheesy what's it that's in charge of it all.
He's a figurehead, man.
So was Hitler. My opinions have actually maybe changed for the better. I could see myself almost going to one of these things just to get a good look at it and unironically enjoying it.
Interesting. I look forward to the updates.
I'll let you know when I've got my tail surgically grafted. Go hard or go home, furry style.
Cool. I think that's everything I've got to say on it.
So not gonna join me at Anthrocon.
I would go.
Midwest Furry Fest.
If I was supplied with a free fursuit or, God forbid, a rented one. And I would be interested to see what it was like. I like fancy dress parties. I like role-playing games. I could make a character. To be honest, part of me, in the safety of a convention, behind some sealed doors and a security gate, sure, why not? I could wear that. But I think it takes real balls to wear that stuff out in the public. I think furries generally don't, but I guess some do. That takes bravery or stupidity, I think, to do that. I wouldn't want to do that. I wouldn't walk around in public wearing a fursuit.
I think it would be confined to specific meetups. I don't think you don't go to Burger King like that every day in your fursuit. And actually,
not for very long.
I do have two more things to say on the sexual topic of furries in why I don't think it's as prevalent in the fursuit side of it. The internet and people drawing stuff, it's always going to be weird and terrible, and you just have to be prepared for that, basically, when you go on the internet. But are the fursuited furries fucking... I mean, I don't know about
yiffing.
You, but... Yiffing, yes, that's true. It can be anything from sniffing and nuzzling in an animalist way to full-on rampant sex.
Full-on porking.
Not many pig costumes. But like, I'm sweating sitting here in shorts and t-shirt in a boxed-in room in its, you know, mid-20s now. Imagine walking around in a fursuit for any amount of time. Now imagine trying to have sex inside a fursuit.
This is what people say, is I've paid a lot of money for that. I'm not getting mess on it.
Yeah, it's just impractical. I mean, it's going to stink anyway of your sweat and Cheetos. But
you can wash them, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know.
One hopes. I think you can wash them.
I think they're dry clean only.
Maybe they are. Maybe if you care.
But there are specific types of suits called mer suits, which are more designed for sex. So let's just leave that for...
let's not ask how you know that.
Private research time.
Wonderful. Thanks for that, Andy. Informative as always. Informative and chilling.
Ending should on a gross note.
Tagline for this podcast.
It's good to get back to it, even if it was on a bigger, creepier topic, but it's nice to tackle some of these ones, and nice to be back speaking to you.
Likewise. What are we going to do next? Have we picked one?
That is for us to discuss offline. That's not for the prying ears of the public to know what's coming up. No spoilers here.
You nosy bastards, get out of it.
Yeah, if you want to know, you'll have to wait for it to drop.
You'll have to scroll upwards very slightly, or downwards, depending on your platform.
Or wait for me to send you the cassette to your underground bunker in the post-apocalypse wasteland. Yeah, so that's all for today. I think that's the topic of furries. Our opinions have slightly changed, but not much.
Excellent. Good work, Andrew.
Thank you, Joe. And I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
If you enjoyed today's episode, why not check out some other alternative content from some of our friends?
Welcome to the That's Effin' Weird podcast, where we cover anything weird.
A month later, her foot was found in a retention pond 150 miles away.
Unsettling.
He reinstates a bounty system that was used during the French and Indian War, which is a scalp bounty. So basically, you get paid $134 if you bring back an enemy Native American scalp.
Informative.
The costume that they used for that Bigfoot episode was the same costume in a Harry and the Hendersons.
Oh, wow.
Really?
And sometimes funny.
Digging their claws into me would be something that would, I don't know if I could, I think it would hurt. I mean, obviously it would hurt, but I don't know.
This is for survival, though. You got time to think about the pain afterward.
True.
I mean, you're fighting for your life here, like, yeah, it hurts when I'm just, you know, trying to eat my breakfast and the cat's scratching me.
If there's anything you guys want us to cover, be sure to leave us a comment or hit us up in our Discord. But just remember, we don't want stuff that's normal. We want stuff that's effing weird.